gentlemen, welcome to a very special live edition of The Corner Store. We are in an incredible pop-up bar done by former Corner Store guest and incredible visual artist, Don't Fret. We are in Don't Fret's Light Times. Make some noise for yourselves for being in the building today. We have a live bar audience.
It's amazing. You guys should see it. The listeners have a podcast. They could totally see it.
Yes, thank you. Well, I'm going to introduce you in a moment.
Okay.
Don't Fret, thank you for having us, man. This is a beautiful pop-up. Thank you all for being here. Salutes to WGN Radio, Ernie, Cashera, Todd Manley for getting us out. Unfortunately, co-host, my dear co-host, Tar Mahadevan, is under the weather and is not with us today, in spirit always, but not... on the microphone today. So
she's at Riot Fest.
Yeah, she is. She got other responsibilities. We do have an incredible guest, though, today, a man who I've known for a long time. Someone who is, I think, like a Chicago Renaissance artist. Someone who is a multi-hyphenate. I think I first knew him, of course, as a graffiti writer, but also someone who is an incredible DJ, who has made the turn into cooking to become a chef. The proprietor of Kimski, under many, many pseudonyms. But please, y'all, make some noise for our good friend in the corner store, Juan.
Yeah. Hyphenate.
Juan, thanks for being here, man. We have some snacks for you that people have already enjoyed. You've been kind enough to pass them around to make them communal snacks.
Yeah. You have some. I don't want to call anyone out real quick, but I know the Jay's silent, so I'm going to say Yamila took all this shit.
Yes. we have for you some gummy skin tags.
Yeah.
And also,
I've never seen worms that small. I mean, you can't call them gummy worms when
gummy
they're
worms.
That small. I mean,
okay.
That is a very specific
maybe
shape.
Gummy,
and texture.
Maybe they're gummy minnows.
Yeah. As someone that has 1,000 skin tags on their body, I know what skin tags look like. I would say that I'm an expert at this point.
And also some sriracha chips.
Yeah, that's great. You got an Asian flavor snack, Max. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean,
I feel very at home.
Yeah, Max is racially profiling
your snacks.
Feel
very at home in Northern California, where these chips come from. Absolutely.
Max is from California, so that makes sense. And then also, you know, Juan, you helped get us our first and only sponsor outside of WGN Radio. You helped us get Stolen Spirits to be our sponsor. So thank you so much for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Appreciate you. We're going to talk a lot, but you know, we want to kind of explore your career and what you do and what you make.
Why'd you give me the big chair? You should have the big chair.
I'm very comfortable. You look great in that big chair.
I feel weird.
Yeah? Do you want to switch?
No, it's fine.
Okay. But let's start with... we're matching our socks, by the way, a little bit. I mean, yours are...
Mine are far cooler because there's gang signs all over it.
But mine has like an MF Doom mask on it.
So. Mine was free from Vans.
So are mine from...
Shout out to Vans.
Stance. Shout out to Stance.
Shout out to Vans.
Okay. Yeah, man, so where do you come from?
My mom, hello. That's where life begins.
Yes, it does.
Born in South Korea, grew up in West Rogers Park by... actually, the Hasidic Jews of Chicago, honestly.
Yeah.
Grew up around a lot of Serbian Jewish types off of Devon. And then went to high school in the burbs, but partied in the city. And then went right back to the city after high school.
Okay. That was very quick. Let's slow it down some.
I mean, you told me the pockets was 6 minutes.
So. What? So why did your folks come to the States from South Korea?
They heard it was fucking lit, bro. But they had no
that
emojis.
Was their language?
They had no emojis back then.
Yeah,
so he just lit a fire. They came because they didn't like Korea anymore, honestly. The short end of it is like my mom got sick of living there. It was overcrowded even in the 70s. And I think she was told that there was, you know, old immigrant story of like land of opportunities. She landed in Cleveland, Ohio first because my biological father, who's been deceased for a while, his side of the family lived there, and they coerced my mom to move there first. But has anyone been to Cleveland?
Yeah,
it's a fucking shithole.
Wow.
So My bad. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Co-signing, yeah.
So she wanted to move to Chicago. She wanted to move to an area that was a little more diverse and had a little bit more opportunity and cheaper rent and more space. So the five of us grew up in a one-bedroom apartment in West Rogers Park.
The five of you?
Yeah. It was like the Taj Mahal of Rogers Park.
Who is the five of you?
My stepfather, my stepbrother, my biological brother, my mother, and I.
And where are you in the order?
I'm the youngest.
Okay. That's sweet, right?
It also makes a lot of sense.
Because you're a big baby?
Yeah.
What did your mom do? Or what does she do?
Well, she was, when she first moved here, she was in the dry cleaning business, like a lot of other Asians, a lot of her peers were doing. My father did the same thing, and then they went into retail, like the flea market circuit type thing. That's where my obsession with hats came in, and baseball jerseys, and basically things that, you know, were cool at the time that I had no business wearing.
Right.
Like rhinestone hats and basketball jerseys and skull caps. These are all things that, like, people look really cool in, and I was like, I can't wear that yet, you know?
But you did?
Oh, fuck no. I was terrified.
Okay.
I was trying to look cool, so I didn't. And then that was like 1 year ago, so yeah. I feel comfortable wearing socks.
What were your folks doing at the flea markets?
They were selling shit, you know. They were in like a poorer neighborhood. So we were in Milwaukee. At one point, we were doing retail stuff in Milwaukee every weekend. And, you know, if you grew up in an immigrant family, that means you're an employee. You're like a son and everything. That's all cool. And then you're an employee, part-time, full-time, basically whenever you know, because they'll just like guilt trip you if you don't do it. They'll be like, well, I guess we're not eating this week. And I was like, wow. I didn't know a 10-year-old's fucking assistants would like prevent us from eating. Holy shit. I better go to Milwaukee with you guys and sell cheap knockoff fucking Yankees jerseys. So we would go there a lot. And then we eventually found a longtime home in West Rogers Park. It's a place called Clark Mall over on Clark and Toohey. You remember that shit, right? Yeah. Yeah, and then my dad used to do embroidery on hats for all the gangbangers because he didn't know what the pitchfork meant back then.
So they would come to him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just black and gold all day. fucking black and blue, black and red, black and pink. Dukes, the Blue Devils were a huge hit. Chicago Blackhawks, because of the eyebrow with the pitchfork going through the side, was a huge hit. Pittsburgh Steelers, Pittsburgh Pirates, anything with a giant pitchfork or eagle head was a thing. And then graffiti writers would come in and get their name all big on the back of the hat. And I just, something that I didn't understand really back then, because I didn't know what civil meant. When he came in, I was like, what the fuck does that mean? But you know, he was really nice, and I was like, he's not a gangbanger. He just, even though he was, I think he was a Royals back then, but I just didn't, you know, I didn't put two and two together. And yeah, that was kind of my foray into like that weird subculture. And it like kind of like really got me interested in everything I do today, honestly. It all kind of ties back and came full circle. And even to this day, when I tell old school graffiti guys, like, yo, my dad used to do your hat, they would flip the fuck out.
Wow.
They'd be like, yo, your dad would yell at me and say, I gotta charge more, because they would get the letters like this big on their hat that's like this big, you know. And I was like, yeah, I was that guy, like I was that kid, like crying in the corner where you're yelling at my dad about not giving him more money. That was me. Yeah, the guy that pissed the pants, that was me. Thank you for that. Thanks for yelling at my dad in front of his kids. That was awesome, man. Good job.
You mentioned Civil. Who are some other writers that you remember from that time?
Jeez. Around that area, there were Flea Tags, Civil, Beer, Cobweb. Basically, all of UAC and J4F were up there. And then I would see Diggs, always a lot of Diggs, J's Tags, THC Crew, some of the Evanston guys.
This is
early 90s.
Early 90s.
Yeah,
okay.
Early 90s. A lot of UFG, THC guys, TMS were up there by Evanston. I would see some J-Pwn Tags. You know, Pose was even doing stuff back then at an early age. I mean, yeah, just those are ones that stuck out at me because they had shit everywhere. Also, Paige. Paige was in the West Rogers Park a lot.
Yeah, and went on kind of like a killing spree at that point.
Yeah, it was kind of a no man's land over there, so they kind of just had it, you know, it was free. It was free for everyone to write shit on.
So clearly you're paying a lot of attention to what's happening in terms of graffiti because of your dad's relationship to the writers.
Well, sort of. I mean, I was pretty curious kid, so like, you know, I would like to ask questions or find out what things meant or, you know, wonder why things were to be. So, you know, I kind of just would just notice a lot of these things scribbled on other things that wasn't there. So that immediately kind of like got me interested, and you know, I dug deeper. And then I had a locker partner whose older brother did graffiti. I'm a product of the CPS school system, so we all had to share lockers because we were poor.
Is this in high school?
This was in grammar school.
Okay. What grammar school did you go to?
I went to Clinton and then Boone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, Clinton. He's got my ass beat so much over there.
Really?
Yeah.
It was
fun. Because I was small and Asian.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just had pitchforks all over me, dude. But yeah, I mean, that was just one of the things, I don't know, it just kind of clicked with me. I was like, who are these people with these weird fucking names? What the fuck does that mean? I want to do it. What is it? What is it all about?
So when did you start writing?
I think I started getting like interested around 12, 13 years old. Mm-hmm. That's when I was like, oh, bubble letters. It looks like tags. It was like inflated. This is fun. I was terrible at it.
What would you write then?
I honestly don't remember my first graffiti name, but it was pretty bad. It was like five consonants. It made no sense. I was trying to be artsy and be like, yeah, no one could say it. And I looked at it, I was like, no one could spell it either, including me. I forgot the B. It was like a B, T, S, and a Z, and like a number 6. And I was like, no, that's a G, dude. You know, it made no sense.
Sounds difficult.
Yeah, it was pretty dumb. And then I think I came up with Revise in high school when I was not a good student. So I would see that word on my English paper all the time because they knew I was trying to bullshit my way through all the essays. And yeah, and I saw the word and I was like, ooh, 6 letters. That should be easy to put out there. unlike Zeb or something, that's 3 letters. That'd be, you know, sure, I'll pick a really difficult word.
Right.
So I started practicing with that, and then by the time I really got into it, I was like, I didn't want to change my name because I was lazy. And I was like, well, I'm already good with the R, figured out the S. I got to keep this name now. So kind of stuck.
Right. No, it's definitely stuck.
Yeah.
That's an interesting time to get into graffiti. Where'd you go to high school?
I went to Maine East.
Okay.
In the burbs.
Right.
Yeah.
And so how would you then navigate coming back and forth, or how were you writing with people in the city?
Yeah,
was there a suburban crew?
Because I grew up in the city through the grammar school times, I, you know, developed a lot of, you know, friendships here. And then I knew, you know, none of us had cars, you know, or older brothers who could afford cars. So I knew how to ride the buses. I figured out all the train lines. I knew all the red line stops by heart. And I knew where all the graffiti spots or all the productions were. So I would gauge where I was by the production that I saw when we went past it on the red line. So I figured out with my brother when we moved to my parents wanted to move to the suburbs, and then I figured out like, oh hey, there's a Pace 270 that goes on Milwaukee to the blue line, and then we could tag every single thing on that bus on the way there. When we get off, we could put 3 stickers on the Jefferson Park stop, get on the blue line, hit up that shit, and then get on the train and go downtown, write on everything we can, and then come back.
Wow.
So that was like my high school days.
Right.
Because I didn't get along with suburbanites. I didn't go to their weird junior highs that are split, you know. There's like the 6th through 8th graders are separated from the K through 5. And that wasn't something, you know, I was like, that's fucking new to me. You guys have 2 separate facilities for this? Like CPS, you just cram everyone in. And you're like, well, you know, if you get past K, you get the numbers, you know, go up to 8th. So they didn't like me, and then I had a hard time making friends. So I would always just go back to the city and just hang out with them. And at the time, I was still helping out my parents at the store, so I would have to figure out a way to get to Clark Mall from the suburbs, And that was where the train lines and bus lines came in, and that's when, you know, I would really start to write on everything I could.
And during that time, of course, that's when Chicago was taking great lengths to criminalize graffiti.
Yes.
They made it a felony. They made it impossible to buy spray paint in the
yeah.
city, especially for young people.
Yeah, and that's another advantage I had, too, because I remember I would catch the bus from Gulf Mill, because that was like a port for the Pace buses, and there was a Sears that had sold spray paint, and I would fucking steal the shit out of that place.
Right.
Because, like, no one bought spray paint in the suburbs. Everyone uses a brush to paint their doghouse. It's fucking weird. I was like, dude, I could do that shit in 10 minutes. Why are you spending 2 hours on it, dude? Like, just put a fat cap on it, you know? Like, it's done. So they would have just stockpiles of spray paint. And I would just be like, well, I'm about to go into the city. I'm going to take one can for now. I'm not going to be greedy because they might notice. And then I befriended someone that worked there because he was like, hey, you do graffiti, right? I was like, no. They're like, well, I could give you a discount on these cans. I'm like, yes. Yes, I do graffiti. And then he would ring up one can, and I would take 20.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a good hustle.
Yeah.
And then, but I did like to, you know, I liked to steal back then too, but
yeah,
only when necessary.
Is,
yeah.
yeah,
only when necessary. I didn't steal from people. I just stole from, like, bigger guys.
Well, you had a clear advantage then coming in with that much of an arsenal, I would
Yeah,
imagine.
All the time. I mean, I was so wasteful with spray paint back then too. Like, I just didn't know how to use it or how to control it. So, you know, a lot of the products that I would use would kind of just fall by the wayside because, you know, that's how you learn, right? I mean, you have to fuck up a lot and be wasteful for a little bit until you could really hone in on your craft and be like, well, I know I don't need 8 cans to paint that one doghouse. It could be one.
Well, outside of your own, you know, starting and stopping, who are some of the people or where are some of the places where you were getting an education or mentorship inside of the culture?
You mean the streets?
Yeah, yeah. Who
taught me in the streets?
That's right.
Honestly, I would go to Tower Records, and I would look at graffiti magazines. And
when it was on Webster?
No, RIP. The one on, Webster and Clark.
Yeah.
They had a stockpile of graffiti magazines pre-geotag days, and they would have the location. They would show the corner, and I would be like, well, how the fuck do I get there? Let me figure this out. And then I would go there, and I realized, I'm like, oh, my God, I am in a terrible neighborhood. There's like a 14-year-old gangly Asian kid on a bus with a bunch of Latinos that look like they want to kill me. But check out that wall. That's dope. And I found it. I would find it that way. And I would study the wall like a nerd. And I would just stare at it for a while, get back on the bus, and be terrified on my way home and just start writing on things because I was like, I don't know what to do. If I don't make eye contact with them staring at me, they won't beat me up. But they did anyways. It's okay. That was one way. Other ways were like, I would check out like permission walls in the city back then. There are still permission walls now in the South Side. The only walls that existed were in the South Side. There were some walls that existed in like Evanston that like TMS were painting, but primarily most of the walls were in the South Side. So I would have to go like dig deep. And there was a festival once, and I remember seeing all the names up that I would see in the magazines, and I would freak out. Like I felt like I was meeting celebrities, and yeah. I would like just watch them paint for hours, and just like,
what are some of the names?
Like, you know, like Raven was one of the first guys I met, who was like, and he just painted my back wall too recently. So it's like, again, full circle.
Yeah.
I saw Civil Paint. I think DC5, like Aerosol Crew, all those guys, you know, those are guys that I was like, I revered, you know.
They're Chicago legends.
Yeah, guys. Now they're a bunch of drunks that hang out at the bar. It sucks. I mean, it's true, just like me. But I would watch them paint, and I would see what they were doing. And these were like before Iron Lack, before Montana Brands.
Before doing this all YouTube, before social media.
Before anything, before any, like, tools, visual tools to help you learn on your own. You have to watch and just
in person.
And just fail in person,
yeah.
You know, and you have to keep practicing. That's the way you had to learn. And I did it so much at that point. And, you know, when I say I did it so much, like, it pales in comparison to what other people did probably had to do to get good, you know. And I would literally just, it just consumed me. I mean, during my teenage and like college years, it just consumed me. And I just, all I wanted to do was write on things and, but like not be a real dickhead about it, you know? Like I kind of had some morals. Like I didn't paint on churches or like public buildings or educational things. I just wrote on everything else. Everything else I could. Like I would figure like, oh, who the fuck cares about garbage cans with tags? Like you gotta be a real piece of shit to care, right? You know, so that stuff and like, you know, the train lines, you know, some of the rooftops, abandoned buildings, like, you know, anything with a surface I would try to write on. It was a really weird habit.
Well, you got very good, and one of the ways, of course, people, you know, will bring you into a community and, right, you know, you rep CMK, Chicago.
CMW. Crew.
CMW, my bad.
Whoa, Max. My bad. He has to do his research, buddy.
My bad.
My one sheet. Where's my one sheet?
But
sorry.
This okay. No, my bad. But
is that
you,
a thing?
But how did you get involved in that crew?
Funny you say that. I was at a breakdancing battle in Northbrook.
Yes.
At
the YMCA?
YMCA? No, yeah, it was, I think.
Because I used to do the city versus city battle.
Yeah, it was that. Yeah. It was that battle.
Yeah.
Who did you throw that on? Who was that?
Tribe.
Yeah.
Chicago Tribe.
So, I had just looked at another graffiti magazine, and there was a CMW whole freight whole car in there, and I was like, "Damn, that is fucking bad," you know, and like the names were Joke, Eerie, and Flask. And I was like, oh, man, I hope I get to run into these guys someday, you know? I'm envisioning, like, you know, really cool-looking, like, you know, like inner-city kids with, like, cool gear, Tommy Hilfiger gear on and, like, visors and shit. It was, like, a fat white dude from Jefferson Park with, like, a leather jacket. I'm like, I'm like, okay. I'm like, are you – and he was wearing a CMW hat. I'm like, you fucking nerd. God, you're, like, the opposite everything. Everything opposite of what I envisioned. And then I was like, hey, are you in this crew that you're wearing the hat for?
Way to deduce.
And then, you know, he was just like, yeah, why? I was like, I don't know, because I just saw something of yours, and I want you to draw my book. I used to carry around a sketchbook.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sure.
I was that nerd. And
but a lot of people, I mean, that is indicative.
Yeah,
even now,
I know.
I mean, people will...
But I was really fucking nerdy about it.
Yeah, nothing's changed.
And then he drew my book, and he was like, he looked at some of the stuff. He was like, oh, shit, you know, we need some more young people into the crew. You should come by a meeting. And then I kind of just, like, talked my case and said, well, I like writing on things like you guys do. This is our similarity. We like to write on things. We like to paint things that aren't ours. So.
And was there a trial or probation period?
I don't know. I know that I brought in Ascend and Indy into the crew at the time, and they were heavy hitters with
me. Yeah,
those
are good writers, yeah.
And it wasn't like a trial. It was kind of like an audition. It's like, well, let's see what you can do if we're not involved. Let's see how much you can paint.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, well, I want these two guys to join me because these are guys I paint with all the time.
How did you meet those guys?
Indy used to be a rollerblade artist. He used to like rollerblade tricks and shit, like the inline skates.
Yeah.
And he was a videographer. He's a very successful videographer now, but back then he had always had a camera in his hand, I remember. And he would do really avant-garde letters like I would do. That was totally, you couldn't read it. So I'd be like, dude, you and I should paint together, man. But not rollerblade ever in public together, ever. Like, I don't want to rollerblade with you ever. Let's make that clear.
You're not a big rollerblader.
Yeah, and I was like, don't rollerblade around me either, please. Let's just draw together. So him and I would paint together a lot. And then Ascend, I actually don't know how I met Ascend, but we were all pretty young, you know, in our 20s. He just kind of, you know, started – he was a really good painter from the get-go. So it was only natural that, you know, I wanted to paint with this guy too.
Yeah,
that's good. But we formed our little crew within a crew, and then we would just paint everything. We painted a lot together. Like permission walls, we would drive to San Antonio to do claw caps together. You know, we stopped in St. Louis to do a train once on the way back from San Antonio, and we would just do everything together painting wise and that's all we would think about, talk about, and be about, you know. And Indy would just go on his own missions and just go ham. And some of the spots, I was like, dude, that's too ballsy for even me. You know what I mean? But some of the times, he did take me on the ledges, and I'm afraid of heights, and I'm a terrible climber. So,
well, how does that work as a writer?
You just don't look down, and you just kind of like, I don't know, smoke a lot of weed. I don't know, drink a lot.
Okay.
Like the drinking part, like it shouldn't help you, but it helped me a little bit. So I would just get drunk. Yeah, yeah. Some of the butterflies would get drunk in my stomach. So they were fine with it. And I remember, yeah, there were some spots that we definitely shouldn't have done.
Well, that run, when you guys were kind of auditioning or whatever, what, do you remember some of the spots or some of the places or the runs you guys made in order to get in?
Yeah, I mean, we did a lot of street spots, you know? We just, like, hopped out of the car, did a bunch of tags. We would find stuff on Chicago Avenue that were abandoned. This was, like, you know, that time when all those businesses were starting to open up or...
So what years are these?
This is, like, 2006?
Talk about the loop.
Shut up. 2000-ish, 6-ish, I don't know. Uh-huh. College.
Okay.
So, like...
And where are you going to school at this time?
Columbia College. I
did
went
you graduate?
To. What'd you say?
Did you graduate?
Yeah.
Oh.
What does that mean?
No, we have a lot of guests. We have a lot of guests in the corner store who will go to Columbia for like a semester, a year, and then for whatever.
It's funny.
Reason.
I went to DePaul for a year in theater, and I was like, oh, I did so much. I worked so hard to get into this theater program, and I hate it.
Where were you gonna go to theater?
I was a lighting
for?
Major. Yeah, super cool, man. Silence. What'd you do in theater? I turned the lights on.
That's
boom.
A big job. That's a big job.
Although there's no show if there's no lights. So
hey, let them
booyaka.
Know. Yeah. So that didn't work out, though.
No. I figured it was such a hard school to get into. It was so reputable. And all the other kids that got in there annoyed the fuck out of me. So I was like, I kind of brought it together. I was like, man, if these are the people I have to work with because this is one of the best schools, I don't want to do this anymore. I hate these people.
Yeah.
So then I went to Columbia, and I was like, yeah, I'll do radio, I guess. I don't know, something stupid.
Is that's what you studied?
That's what I graduated with, a BA in radio production.
Nice.
Right when Sirius came out. Yeah, right when XM Radio came out, I'm like, wow, this is useless now. I better do something else. But I was painting, so my schedule in college would be wake up, go to class, do homework on the train or whatever, paint a freight, do some street spots, hit a late night spot, and then catch tags on the way home, and then wake up and repeat.
So that's an interesting schedule, especially because you are over 18 at the time, and you're continuing to make the choice to continue in a legal practice.
Yeah. It's again, it was just, to us, it was just something that was natural and fun for us to do, and it was really enjoyable. Like, doing criminal activity is really fun. It's a really weird thing. It's like this weird rush, you know. I think with any passionate person, when they do something that they're passionate in, they, you know, they get this weird endorphin rush, and they're like, "Well, I don't get it doing anything else, so it must be something I was meant to do or just keep doing." So this was something that we kept getting, and it'd be just again, you know, what Zeb was talking about with like the loop area. We would crush the loop, like that was our goal. And I remember when people were like, oh, yeah, we saw that spot. That was even more of like, holy shit, that's great. We're doing our job that we don't get paid for.
Right.
You know what I mean? That we're spending our own money on and I'm losing sleep over. It's like people are noticing. That's great, you know?
Were you altogether successful in avoiding the police?
Fuck no. I've been arrested 7 times.
Okay.
Yeah.
Eight times. Eight times.
Eight times.
That's a lot.
8 times, yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it was all for graffiti.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except for that one other thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, graffiti.
Okay. You don't want to talk about that other thing.
Well, it was murder, whatever.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Tax evasion, murder, same thing. I mean, let's be real.
And so, I mean, in that, you were arrested and you served, you were a county, or?
No, just in a holding cell. All the cases got thrown out because I never got caught for the big things. I always got caught for, like, really stupid things. I remember I was arrested by 4 undercovers for literally taking out a marker. And I literally just dabbed it on the bench, swooped in, grabbed me.
Wow.
And I was like, what is going on here? Where's the crime? What's happening? They just surrounded me, and they're like, get the fuck up. I was like, why? Like, you have an illegal thing, whatever language they use. I was like, a marker. Yeah, it's just a marker. It's a Sharpie. And then I had to go to jail for that. And then there was another time where there was a abandoned fucking window front. It was it was cracked out. There was all these tags on it. I literally, again, just dabbed one thing. A squad car, a paddy wagon, and another car came from down the street. Wow. And I was like, holy shit, who got shot? This is crazy. And then they pointed at me. And I was like, what? And I wiped it off with my hand. I was like, boom, it's gone. I'm not a criminal anymore. And then, yeah. And then one of those fucking cops, I tried to get my record expunged. Man, what a process. One of those dicks turned all those misdemeanors. One of them was a felony on there.
Right.
And the cops have that power to turn it into a felony if they want, and it's on record forever. I got kicked out of Canada because of it, but...
Oh, wow.
Well, that
so
was part of
you
it.
You have that on your record?
Yeah, it's on my record.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get it expunged.
Right.
My mugshot, by the way, is amazing.
Do you have it?
I don't have it. I posted it online.
Okay.
But man, my hair was dope. It was like so flowy, right? Would you say? It was a good-ass picture. Yeah. I printed out like no beard, just like long,
wow.
Flowy hair.
Well, you're very handsome.
Well, no. Like this was like 10 years ago, the photo. Yeah. My eyes were just like soulless a little, you know? Mm. Yeah, it looked good. I was very proud of myself.
Now, it's interesting because now you do... I mean, I was in a restaurant the other day, and your work is up on walls around the city, and you have permission or you're paid to do that work.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it sort of evolved, right? Like, after a certain age, you know, you start... I think for some people, it kind of gets, you know, you kind of want to see what the next thing is, you know? Especially with laws being so strict... With people, everyone has a phone that could record you. Condos are up everywhere, so they have these bird-eye views. That's how I got arrested last time with Negro. Someone from a condo called us on the Reggie's rooftop.
Yeah.
And this was like late as hell. I remember getting arrested. We couldn't, you know, take the stairs down, so we had to be carried like victims. The firemen like scooped me up and handcuffed, and I was like, oh, this is so embarrassing. This is just like adding insult to injury, man. He like literally like Chicago PD just like picked me up. He's like, I got you. While I was handcuffed, and I was like, I kind of like wanted to bury my head into his chest. I was like, oh man, that fucking snuggle factor.
How recent is this?
This was a while ago, like maybe 10 years ago, 12 years ago. I was at the ABA, Irony of Irony, the American Bar Association at the time. So that was a fun day at work.
You were working there.
Yeah, so those kind of moments make you kind of realize, like, oh, I don't want to do this shit anymore, you know, especially with the risk, you know. So, you know, and then after having eaten out and, you know, going out to restaurants a lot, I would see a lot of terrible art and just be like, whose cousin fucking painted that wall? Like, that menu board is awful. And then, you know, I was doing stuff for Whole Foods already, so I would always just kind of be like, you know, I'll do that shit for free. I just don't want to see that anymore.
Well, let's talk about that evolution. And even before we get into working at Whole Foods and your interest in the culinary arts, I, of course, knew you as a DJ as well. I mean, you were playing bars and some clubs. When did that
clubs
practice begin for you?
I think around the same time I was doing art stuff. I think when I got sick and tired of doing art, I would turn to music. And, you know, they're all the same to me because... Music motivated me to do certain things, and art would motivate me to kind of like dig deeper for things that I liked. And at the time, my friends threw a house party in my apartment and left their turntables on my kitchen floor with a mixer, like garbage. And I kept telling them, like, you gotta come pick this shit up. You know, it's gonna get broken. I'm clumsy. And they just didn't. They just left it there because, you know, they were 18-year-olds, which is irresponsible, you know. So I went to Gramophone and just bought some records. And I was like, I want to see what they're doing in their headphones. I want to see what this is about. And then something clicked in my brain. I became super obsessive about that, too. So I would spend a lot of money buying records. And then it was like the same idea of like doing research and like going out there to concerts and shows. And some of my friends were promoters and throwing parties. And just, you know, it was like that weird time where, like, all the hip-hop stuff was, like, just really coming full circle. It had a little renaissance, you know? So all the music was very interesting to me. So I would constantly want to see what the next thing is or what the new shit was. So I would just, again, become obsessive about it.
What were you drawn to? What were you listening to, and what records would you buy?
You know, like a lot of the underground hip hop stuff. Like people, I remember People on the Stairs had a huge impact on me. Anacon, the record label, had a huge impact. What's it called? Company Flow, all the East Coast stuff, all the raucous records, the Beat Junkie stuff, the Alcoholics, you know, Wu-Tang, Nas, Premier, Gangstar, all the 97, you know, era, 96, or 93 to 97 era, De La, you know, Native Tongues, fucking Gene Gray even, Natural Resource, you know, Juice, Rhymes, all the Rhymesayers stuff, Rhyme Fest.
Yeah. Well, when did you start to realize that there was this bubbling Chicago scene, and when did you start listening to Chicago music?
That's another thing. Like, I was going to a lot of parties, like the underground parties and stuff, and all the b-boy events in the city. I went to a lot of Zulu Nation parties that were kind of for profit. But you got the medallion, though. Remember? You would send in $50 and you get a really shitty leather medallion with that stupid face.
Yeah, those are dope as shit, though.
Yeah, I kind of wanted one. But
did you go to the Cassius D's spot?
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. He was a fucking dick. But
did you go in the back room and get a lecture?
No.
Okay.
Oh hell no. Yeah. I did not need that. But I went to all those parties in Hyde Park. Yeah. Went to the Promontory Point. Yeah. Went to the West Loop parties. Alcatraz was still around. There was a party called the Rap Down that I went to.
You remember China Club?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't go. Okay. I wasn't cool enough.
Okay, but yeah, you know spots.
But this is when there's teenage clubs around.
Yeah,
remember the teenage clubs?
Medusas.
They wouldn't let anyone over 18 in there, which is really weird.
Did you go to the Rainbow Rink?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Over on Clark. Yeah. On Lawrence.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So a lot of rollerbladers there. Julian wasn't one of them, but it was still funny.
So when did you get good enough to start playing out, even if it's a house party or when?
I didn't feel comfortable playing out until like 2004, 2005. That was when Lava Lounge was in its heyday.
Yeah.
And Mondo, who was an excellent talker and promoter, another graffiti writer that was into hip hop, he wanted to learn how to DJ, but he somehow got all these nights at all these bars, and he was a promoter for it. You know, hand flyer days. So he would. I was still learning, and you know, I was always one of those people that like kind of just did things and asked for forgiveness later. So even though I wasn't good, I would still want to play and be like, just put me on. I got it. And then I would take that as practice out there. So playing in front of people added this weird pressure to want to get really good, just like kind of painting in front of people or like doing jobs where strangers might see it. It's like it's all the same. It's the same discipline of really honing in and really figuring out how you're gonna get better, you know. And I would never say that anything I'm doing right now, I'm at the peak of anything or I've reached any kind of plateau. I think I'm gonna die thinking I wasn't good enough to do any of the things I do, you know what I mean?
But that's part of what motivates you. And I mean, I knew you, you know, as a graffiti writer and as a DJ, but this whole time you had this growing interest in the culinary field.
Yeah, I mean, that just came from, you know, again, my mom would...
She a good cook?
She was a great cook, but she would work so much that she would never, you know, she would just make things in the morning before work. No, I'm realizing this now as an adult, like how much she actually did for us to make sure we were fed, you know. She would like prep things, kind of like how cooks prep things for the day, and then come back and cook the rest of it and make the meal for us. And I think seeing that, and she would, because I was the youngest in the family, she would always let me get away with things that the other people in my family didn't like in the soups and stuff. Like I loved mushrooms growing up, but there was no mushrooms in anything, but she would just put it in there for me just on the fly, you know. And then
would you help her in the kitchen some?
Oh yeah. So I would have to make kimchi with her, you know. And to this day I still use that recipe. Still
your mom's recipe?
Oh yeah.
Wow. I guess you don't want to share family secrets, but...
It's easy. It's just salt. And then...
But that's an involved... pickling anything is an involved process.
Yeah. And then it's all time. And then I was in high school. I was responsible for making the rice for the family. And if I fucked up, we didn't eat. So there's that pressure.
A lot
pressure.
Of pressure on yeah. you as a kid.
But because I remember, I was like, is there a formula to this? Like, is there like, you know, the typical ratio is always 2-1 for rice, for any rice cookery. But short grain rice, the sushi rice that we used to eat, it was medium grain, so it took more water. She never measured anything. So right. she'd just be like, just wash it, but don't wash it too much. Make it a little dirty. I was like, what does that mean? Does that mean like cloudy? She's like, no. Just don't make it so clean. I'm like, oh, okay. And then how much water did I put in? Just enough. That was her direction for making rice. To this day, I'll be like, how many cups of rice is that to water? She's like, it's just enough.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. This doesn't make any fucking sense. What the fuck, you know? But now I realize that's how I cook. I don't have a single recipe written down. Everything is on the fly. Everything is improvised because that's how she used to cook. You know, she used to take ragu and, you know, cut up all these vegetables and add all that shit to the ragu just so we have our vegetables. You know what I mean?
Right.
She would take government cheese and fucking put it on rice and shit like that, you know?
Hmm.
Like, that was really weird, but it was good, you know?
When did, because you seem like an obsessive person in a good way. Like,
a little bit, yeah.
When did that obsession with making food turn on in your brain?
There was a little hiatus because I almost cut off my finger. when I was cooking for my mom, she was like, you're never allowed to cook in the kitchen. I was like, all right, you got it. So I stopped for a while.
How old were you when you stopped?
I was like 8.
Okay. Oh.
But she had this fucking machete of a knife, and she told me to cut an orange or something, and I was like, this is kind of your fault, Mom. It was my fault. But I think the yearning for wanting to cook for strangers or other people came a little later in life. I think when I always made food. I always liked eating food and stuff like that. But like when I kind of took it serious was when like 2009, I would say. It was like that weird recession or like that weird depression, whatever it was.
Yeah, the bubble burst in the economy.
Yeah, and then all my DJ gigs and art gigs stopped. And I was like, well, what can I do now? What's the government giving free shit on? And they're like, well, culinary school might be an option. I saw someone else in there calling it Chef White's out in public. And now I realize how dumb that is. You should never wear your Chef White's in public because that's disgusting. I saw it and I was like, yo, where'd you get that coat, dude? He's like, it's school uniform, idiot. I was like, okay, where do you go to school, bitch? Tell me everything you know right now. And he told me, and then I was like, okay, I'm going to roll next week. Watch. I'm going to get that same stupid fucking jacket. Watch. And I enrolled. I went to school.
Where at?
I went to Le Cordon Bleu, and I quit.
After how long?
Like 9 months.
Okay.
Yeah, it was useless. Culinary school sucks.
Did you learn stuff there or not really?
I learned whose restaurants I'll never eat at.
Okay.
All my classmates.
Do you want to mention some names or are you?
I forgot all the names. That's
okay.
How useless
yeah,
they are
to right.
me.
That's right. Let them know.
But you know, before that, I was working at the ABA as a catering coordinator, and before that, I was a server. So I already had like all this weird experience.
Where did you serve?
You're gonna love this. The fucking kosher Italian restaurant in Skokie.
What's it called?
Right next to the Hungarian grocery store.
Nice. Which one?
I forgot what it was called. There's okay. only one, motherfucker.
And a kosher Italian place?
Yeah. It was attached to that grocery store off of Oakton. They all benched in there.
Okay.
You know what that is?
What?
Benching.
Benching?
Yeah, when
no.
you do the prayer with the shit, with the card, the placard.
No.
I guess I'm more Jewy than you are.
I don't think so, but...
Yeah, they used to do this thing where they read a fucking prayer, and I was like, what the fuck is that
shit? They read a prayer.
Yeah, they were like, hey.
Sounds like every
day. I had to know this, though. I had to know all the kosher things.
Yeah.
We had a rabbi come in the morning, and he would bless the grills.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Make that shit kosher for real.
Oh, yeah. And he would always, I remember this disgusting thing, he would always put his fucking hand in something and eat it with his hands. I'm like, Jesus, man.
Well, not.
No pun intended.
At all,
yeah.
Yeah, actually.
Actually.
Yeah.
Oi! Right? Is that
yeah,
a thing?
Yeah.
So yeah, he would do that disgusting thing, and I'll be like, dude, man, you're blessing the kitchen, man.
Yeah.
So all these Mexicans could cook in it, and I could serve the food. What the
right.
fuck? Stop yeah. being a dick.
There you go. Or a putz.
And he would always steal liquor, too.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, I love that guy, actually.
Orthodox Jews love to drink.
He was
Jews
the shit.
Jews love to drink.
But yeah, so I knew all the customs, and then I would serve there. You remember Franco De Leon?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the one that got me the job.
Oh, wow.
So I was living in the city, driving up to Skokie, working at the kosher Italian restaurant. And I kind of remember seeing all those guys, the rituals, I mean, just the food production and stuff, like the amazing use of a microwave, and thinking, like, oh, I'm never going to do that.
Right.
But I loved the vegetable soup that they had. It was, like, kosher as fuck. It was good.
Yeah.
That means no pork.
Right. Thank you.
And I remember I always said, like, if these guys piss me off, I'm going to take a pork chop and just rub it on everything.
Damn.
Yeah.
That'd be cold.
But they treated me really well, so I didn't do that.
Wow. I'm surprised. But I'm glad to hear that.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
That's funny.
It'd be pork by association. Sorry. I could keep going with that.
I remember when you started to work at Whole Foods.
Yeah.
You were doing some culinary classes there. You were doing catering there.
Yeah,
you started a sign paint there.
They hired me to do a mural in the Lincoln Park location, the really big one. It was a big deal at the time because it was just massive. And they hired me to do it. And after I was done, I was like, shit, I have no job. This took a lot out of me. And then my friend who was a sign painter at the time was like, do you need a part-time job? I was like, fuck yeah. What do you need me to do? You know, write on stuff. I was like, I'm in. Sold. But I was going to culinary school at the time, too. So I was just like, you know what? I can make this schedule work. All I got to do is, you know, draw a ribeye steak and put sail on it or whatever on the chalkboards. And then there was a demo kitchen in there, I remember. And the person that was running the programming in there hated her life and her job. And she just kind of left. And then I was still in culinary school. And then, again, it's like, you know, just do it and ask for forgiveness later. I was like, you know, maybe I could take over a class. I don't really know. I'm still in school, but if you give me a recipe, I could follow it, and I know how to sort of talk to people.
Yeah, you know how to entertain, actually. You're a good entertainer.
Yeah, because I talk to people like they're humans, you know? I don't fucking, you know, sugarcoat things, and I'm not like...
Were you doing stand-up at that time?
No, nothing like that, so...
Wait, never?
No, never.
In your life?
Never, never, shut up.
Okay.
So...
Don't want to talk about it?
So I took over the classroom, and then I had an idea because I was throwing beer events, like underground beer parties and jams, and I was like, well, can we link up with a brewery and just do like a 5-course dinner in here as a promotion, cross promotion for everybody? And I would set up these private dinners and 5-course beer dinners with breweries because I had a network of breweries that were friends of mine that I could connect with everyone. And
you could pose the menu.
Yeah, I would do the whole menu planning. I basically did all the planning so that Whole Foods didn't have to do any work, but I would get to use the kitchen.
What recipes were you going off of at that point?
I would just make shit up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just make shit up on the fly. Again, it's just one of those things like...
What are some of those early dishes that have stayed with you?
Oof, none of it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't know what the fuck I was doing.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was good and all, but like it wasn't nearly composed. Are we almost done?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Perfect. So, yeah, it was...
Are you having a good time?
It was just weird.
You okay?
No.
You need anything?
This throne is itchy. Yeah, it was a weird world. And then that led into wanting to do more culinary things because they would put me out there as Whole Foods representatives, as like a Whole Foods representative for outside events. I was like, ooh, I don't think that's a good idea. I swear a lot, you know? I don't think you want me representing your brand, you know? But they were fine with it, and then I kind of just...
And you started to do some catering. I mean,
I would do catering on the side to make money on top of all this, and I would still DJ, and I was still painting murals and stuff, and I did... a lot of my friends were getting married, and they were like, well, we can't afford, you know, of legit huge catering. We really want good food there. And I was like, I'll do it. 200 people? No big deal. I've only been feeding 15 people for all this time, but 200 sounds like nothing. So I catered a few weddings, and I was like, wow, this is a really shitty life. I kind of want more, you know?
Right.
It was like torture. I was like, fuck yeah, I want to do more of this shit, you know? And then and at the same time, help out friends, you know? And I was learning how to really steal from Whole Foods in a really good way,
yeah.
In a corporate way.
Yeah.
And it was awesome because I remember if I was to make like a bourbon apple something, all I would need is like one tablespoon of bourbon, and they couldn't sell it if I open it. So what do? I take it. Oh, there's a 6-pack of beer I need for this braise. I would use one bottle and be like, What the fuck are you going to do with a 5-pack? There's no such thing. I better take it. What's up with those bag of towels? They're open. Just take it. What's up with that dishwasher? How often does he work? I'm going to take him.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah. It was great. It was stealing without, like,
stealing?
You know, it was like half stealing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
It was awesome. I have so many fucking towels from them in the past.
There's a theme throughout your career.
Yeah. It's the hustle.
Right.
And stealing.
And making do.
Lots of stealing.
And figuring it out.
Yeah, figuring it out and then going legit. But yeah, there was a little bit of stealing.
And when did you hook up with the guys in Bridgeport? When did you hook up with the fellas who...
Like 4 or 5. So I did a beer event at the Art Space at CoPro down the street. Uh-huh. When it was just Maria's over there. And from there, you know, I linked up with Ed. I hated Ed before because he was a pretentious fuck.
Really?
He sort of is still. But okay. He was going over the murals that the graffiti guys were doing. Because it was a corporate thing, you know. I get it. You know, he was running that magazine, that publication. And I was like, man, fuck this guy. Who does he think he is? Like, those are my friend's murals. They're getting paid to do that shit. And then a couple years later, I was like, oh, he owns this spot that I want to do a beer event at. He's my best friend now. Fuck it. You know, I'll be friends with him.
Yeah.
And then they were already doing a Monday night industry thing where you sell shitty Polishes with kimchi, jarred kimchi, because they're Polish and Korean. And I was going down there to drink. You know, when I got tired of the Northside bars, I would go down there by myself and just hang out in that dark, dark room and just sit like an old man.
It's a great room.
Grumpy as fuck, just drinking by myself, you know? And I loved it because it was like a kind of a haven away. And then I offered to do the kimchi one day. I was like, you know what? I see that you guys have this fucking thing on Mondays. I'm always here on Mondays. Like, how about I whip up something? And then I did it several times, and I was like, how about we do like a pop-up? Because I was also helping out this other guy who used to run Flesh for Food, who would do whole pig cooking, and he did pop-ups with that. I linked up with him, did a lot of jobs with him outside, and we used Maria's as like kind of a spot if we need to do anything or R&D anything. And then they asked me to do – they talked about an expansion. They set me aside, and they were like, we're going to expand Maria's. We're thinking about putting a snack stand. Would you want to do it? I'm like, fuck no. I love my life as it is. I get to paint, make my own schedule, DJ whenever I want. Like, no. I know what it's like running a restaurant. Like, it's not fun.
It's a lot of work.
I've worked for people, and they are miserable. Yeah. You know? I'm like, I don't want to be that guy. They're like, that's respectful. That's fine. 2 weeks later, so Juan, let's go back to the conversation. Do you want to run this restaurant? I'm like, no, absolutely not. And then went back again, and then they got me annihilated drunk. And they asked me again, and I signed a contract. And I was like, okay, so you're going to build me a restaurant? I don't understand what's happening. They're like, yeah, I just signed this shit. I was like, okay, what do I have to do? What are we making? How many days do I have to be there? 7 days? Cool.
That's the way to do it. How did you come up with the name of the restaurant, Kimski?
Ed and I came up with it. My last name is Kim. His last three letters is ski. Mm-hmm. Those are the most common Korean Polish things. So it was only natural that we call it that. This whole thing was a joke, honestly. Like we're all just kind of like, Korean Polish isn't a thing. That sounds really weird. But
why is it a thing? Because I've even heard you talk about the, you know, even what you would see in the groceries or, you know, the pickling aspects in both.
Yeah,
countries.
I mean, you know, on paper, it doesn't sound very good until you just kind of delve in and do research. And you're like, oh, yeah, the Koreans and Poles love rotting food that's salty. Our sauerkraut and kimchi is just fucking decaying food that's right. Delicious, you know?
And good for you.
Yeah, it's good for you. You know, stomach shit.
Yeah.
And then dumplings. Every culture, every poor country has dumplings. And everyone has noodles of some kind. You know, and then it's like the yang-yang, you know, the saltiness of Asian food complement the fattiness of Polish food. There's, you know, stews, stocks, you know, both cultures love pork. Kendall and I go to fucking Northbrook just for Korean barbecue all the time. And all they serve is pork belly. You would go to hell immediately if you had one bite.
If there was.
It's just so sinfully delicious.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's those kind of cross hatchings that made sense to me. You know, like, why wouldn't you add soy sauce to sour cream? That's fucking delicious. You know, sesame seed oil is good on everything. Dill is good on fucking everything. You know, vinegar is good on everything. You know what I mean? So like once I started kind of like designing the menu, I was kind of just like, well, let's taste it and, you know, see, like, there's potatoes and everything. Just fucking put dill in everything. It's fine. So there was soy sauce and everything. Fuck it.
A lot of experimentation in designing the menu, which is always changing, too.
Right. We change our menu seasonally every now and then. You know, and we don't want it to be like this crazy 50-50 blending of the Korean and Polish. We're like, some of it's mostly Polish. Some of it's mostly Korean. You know, we throw it in when we can, but it's not like a mandatory thing, because there's no such thing as Korean Polish cooking. There's no such thing as that. We fucking made that up as a joke,
right?
And it's somehow worked. You know what I mean?
And also feels uniquely Chicago. And
oh, it's totally Chicago. It's second largest population outside of Warsaw.
Right.
All the Koreans are in the suburbs now. They're on Glenview. But and then, you know, we do our daily specials because, you know, we're all insecure. So we want to make sure, we let the public know, like, we do know how to cook other food. Yeah. You know, we do have a background in, like, doing cool shit.
Kimski's open 7 days a week?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Depends.
Yeah. We're 6 days for sure.
Yeah. Sometimes brunch?
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes brunch, sometimes not. Today we ran dinner service all day.
Okay.
I don't know what the fuck is going on sometimes.
And where can people find Kimski, both the physical location and online?
You can
online.
Find us on the Grams at Kimski Chicago. I think the website is KimskiChicago.com, right? Is it? Yeah, just follow our Instagram. You'll be fine.
And people, of course, I mean, you guys also cater outside of the space, but people should go to the restaurant. It's one of my favorite places in Chicago.
Yeah, don't tell people I cater. I fucking hate
catering.
Okay, you don't
like catering. All right. Well, people should
go. We do it, though.
It's delicious food. It's also a great environment. You guys are always
we're attached to Maria still, so that bar is still, you know.
Popping.
It's still woke.
One of the best places in the city.
Is it woke?
I don't know.
No,
but it's great. Yeah, it's a great place to go.
It's lit.
Sure.
Remember literature? Remember that joke?
Yeah.
It's literature?
Yeah, yep. That's funny. And also, where can people find you on the social?
In the streets, bitch!
Right. And also online, if they want to look at your art.
Oh, yeah. Revise CMW.
Okay.
M as in Mary, W as in Juan, C as in Chicago.
Right.
I just said it backwards. Actually, I did the middle word first. Yeah, letter.
Sorry. And then, and also, you are also DJing in these streets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally in the streets. No one wants to hire me anymore.
You have some residencies from here.
I play at Sportsman's first Monday, played Ludlow third Thursdays. Sometimes I play Revival. No, I'm kidding. They fucked me over. Fuck them. And then I play Maria's first Saturday, and then I forgot. I don't know. I play somewhere here and there.
Well,
bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
You stay fucking with my people.
Yeah.
I appreciate you.
What does that mean?
I don't know. But look, even though you're such an asshole, you really are one of my favorite guys in the city. Make some noise, y'all, for Juan one time.
He touched me.
I did. And thank you to Don't Fret. Thank you to Light Times. Thank you all for being here. Thank you to Ernie. Thank you to Max. Thank you to Tara. Thank you to Todd Manley, DJ Cashera. Appreciate you all coming out tonight. Thank you. Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the Corner Store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the Corner Store at cornerstore_pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the Corner Store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.